Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today, we're getting into a name that, well, everyone knows for incredible performance and design, Porsche.
Absolutely. It's more than just cars, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
It's really a cultural icon.
It really is.
Yeah.
So our mission today is to unpack that. We're looking at the history, the innovation, the surprising range of cars they actually make.
Exactly. We've looked at a ton of analysis on their big models, trying to figure out, you know, what makes them tick, how the value holds up or changes, and just that core engineering idea that keeps them ahead.
Think of this as your quick guide to understanding this legend. Whether you're into the tech, the design, or just a good brand story, we think you'll find it fascinating. We'll hit the key moments, the key cars.
And to really get Porsche, you have to start at the beginning with the founder, Ferdinand Porsche.
Right. He wasn't just some guy who decided to build cars. He was the chief engineer at Mercedes-Benz before this.
Yeah, huge background. So that foundation, you know, innovative design, top-tier German engineering, and really understanding what drivers want, that was baked in from day one. Performance, but also how it feels to drive.
And he'd already made a big mark before Porsche the company even existed. Back in, what, 1931, he worked on the Volkswagen, the people's car.
That's right. It showed his vision for making well-engineered cars accessible. Kind of laid the groundwork, even if the goal with Porsche itself was much more about performance.
So fast forward past World War II, 1947, he formally starts the company.
Yep. And he brought all that sports car know-how with him. Lightweight, great handling. It was all there from the start.
And pretty quickly, we get the first actual Porsche car for sale, not just for racing. The 356 Coupe. His son, Ferry Porsche, was behind that one in 1948. Huge deal, really.
Oh, absolutely huge. The 356 really set the template. That whole form follows function idea,
yeah.
It's all there. Every line has a purpose for aerodynamics, for driving feel.
And they stick to that, don't they? Refining, not just totally changing things all the time.
Exactly. Which is why, I mean, you still see so many original 356s out there. They're not just museum pieces. People drive them.
And the value, it's kind of mind-blowing. You're saying originals from 48 are still around.
Driven today, yeah.
Yeah.
And at auction, a really good one can go over £1 million. Easily.
Oh, over a million.
Even standard ones, if they're in good shape, maybe £500,000.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have the special ones, like the Carrera versions from the early 60s or the Speedster from the 50s.
Those are icons in themselves.
Right. And they can pull in, say, £150,000 to £300,000. It just shows the quality and the history.
It's not just because they're old then.
No, not at all. It's because it's the first Porsche, the design is timeless, and the build quality was just phenomenal. They last.
Okay, so the 356 kicks things off, they grow fast, and that leads into racing, and the Spider name starts appearing.
Yeah, and the Spider thing confuses some people. It's not really one specific model back then.
Right, it was more like a style.
Exactly. It meant the Roadster version, open top,
yeah.
Built for racing in the 50s and 60s. And because of that racing connection and how few were made, they're worth significantly more than, say, the standard coupes.
And the most famous Spider story. Probably the James Dean connection, the 550 Spider.
That's the one. Tragic story, of course. But it cemented the 550 Spider in popular culture. And they only made 90 of them.
Ever.
90. That's incredibly rare. You're not finding one of those down the local car lot. Definitely not. I mean, Jerry Seinfeld, the comedian, he's a huge Porsche collector. His 550 Spider, it sold for $5.5 million back in 2016.
$5.5 million. Wow.
Yeah. Now, the modern ones, the 718 Spider, the Boxster Spider, they carry on that name and spirit. Much more accessible, maybe 60,000 to 80,000 pounds, but still capturing that roadster performance feel.
Okay, so they're building this racing reputation, pushing for more speed. That leads to needing more power, a six-cylinder engine.
Precisely. And that development effort resulted in, well, the absolute game changer, the 911.
The Icon, 1963.
Yeah, that launch was massive. It dominated on the track almost immediately, and it just locked Porsche in as a top-tier global brand. The 911 became the Porsche.
And it embodies that whole refinement idea we talked about. Keep improving, keep tweaking, but don't mess with that core silhouette, that core idea.
Exactly. Continuous improvement. So let's dig into some of the big commercial hits, the cars people really know and their value. Starting with the flagship maybe? The 911 Carrera.
Debuted in 73, right. An evolution of the original 63 911. And it's been everywhere. Daytona, Le Mans.
For decades.
Yeah.
The Carrera is probably the most loved 911 variant overall. It just nailed that balance of finesse, style, more power, and crucially sorting out some of the trickier handling aspects of the very early 911s.
That's what they do, that just constant work.
Constant work. track testing, refining the suspension, playing with weight distribution, always pushing within that iconic shape.
And that dedication shows in how long it's lasted. The Carrera name has been on so many different 911s over the years.
Oh, yeah. You had different engine types, different series. The 928 and 944 were actually front engine, which was a departure.
A bit controversial, maybe?
A bit, yeah. But then they came back to the rear engine with the 3.2 Carrera in the 80s, and then the modern ones, the 991 and 992 series.
And the value reflects that history. Early 60s 911s, you're saying, over 1.5 million pounds?
Because of the history, the rarity, their antique status, yeah. But even an 80s Carrera 3.2 can still fetch 100,000 to 200,000 pounds today. That's amazing value retention.
Incredible. What about the more recent ones, the 991 series?
The 991 was really popular, probably the most driven recent one. They made it a bit bigger, updated the styling, improved fuel economy, crucially, without losing the performance.
Made it a bit more usable day to day.
Exactly. Better for couples, maybe even small families.
Yeah.
And the interior tech was much more modern, smoother drive. Lots of different versions of the 991 came out.
And the newest is the 992 from 2019, still carrying that torch. But what if you want the Porsche experience, but maybe can't stretch to a 911?
Well, that's where something like the Porsche 718 Cayman comes in. It's seen as a more accessible way into the brand.
But the 718 name, that has history too, right? Back to the 50s.
It does. The original 718 was a serious racing car back in 1957, formula racing spec. Those originals, 57 to 62, can still be worth over 30,000 pounds. Even the 70s ones hold value well.
So the modern 718 Cayman launched in 2016. It's kind of bringing back that name.
Yeah, it's a callback.
Yeah.
Gives it a bit of vintage feel, but it's designed for modern life, for daily driving. You get a 2.0 or 2.5 liter engine. It's solid, good fun, but maybe not quite the raw edge of a 911. It's sensible Porsche ownership, if that makes sense.
Yeah, weigh in. How does this value hold up compared to, say, a 911?
That's interesting. The 718 Cayman being a higher volume, more accessible model, it depreciates more like a typical car, especially the early 2016 ones.
So it doesn't quite have that investment magic of the limited editions.
No, not the same way, no. It shows Porsche plays both games, the appreciating collector's items and the cars that get more people into the brand day to day, but they keep updating it. 2018 got better launch control, a GT option. 2020 introduced a bigger 4.0 liter engine.
Okay, staying with innovation, we have to talk electric. The Taycan.
Absolutely. Porsche's first fully electric sports car. A massive deal.
It came out as a concept in 2015, but the actual release was 2019.
That's right. Global release in 2019. And the reviews were just stellar. People were amazed that an electric car could perform like a Porsche, speeds up to 260 kilometers. It proved they could adapt without losing their soul.
And the name, Taycan, Turkish for lively young horse.
Yeah, a direct link to the horse on their logo, the Stuttgart coat of arms. It's clever. And it really feels lively, that instant electric torque.
It was a big moment. Rumored price around 200,000 pounds at launch.
Around there, yeah. They launched with four versions straight away. 4S, 4S with a bigger battery, Turbo and Turbo S. And they already had plans for an SUV version, the Taycan Cross Turismo.
Shows they're thinking ahead, adapting to the market, but keeping that Porsche DNA.
Definitely. Which leads us nicely into those other Porsches, the ones maybe built more for, well, everyday life.
Mm-hmm.
The Panamera, Macan, Cayenne.
Right, the Panamera first. That was a big step, wasn't it? A full-size four-door Porsche back in 2009.
Huge step. Built specifically for regular driving, not track days. People called it the XXL 911. More space, more comfort, but still with that Porsche feel.
Did it work? Did the traditional fans accept it?
There was some grumbling from purists, for sure. But it absolutely found its audience. Existing Porsche owners wanting something bigger, more practical. It really broadened their appeal, brought new people in.
It's a heavy car, though.
One of the heaviest, yeah, around 1,800 kilograms. Lots of engine choices, 3.0 up to 4.8 liters. Even hybrid and diesel options later on. Value-wise, in early 2009, in great shape, might be 30,000 pounds now. A top-spec GTS 4.8 liter could be double that, maybe 60,000 pounds.
Okay, then the SUVs, the Macan. That was their flagship SUV, right? Five doors, debuted around 2013-ish.
Yeah, Japan, 2013. On sale more widely, 2015. Another strategic play.
Mm-hmm.
Aimed squarely at people who wouldn't normally buy a sports car. Especially thinking about markets like China.
And that one definitely worked too.
Big time. Over 350,000 sold worldwide. Huge numbers in China. Again, some initial pushback, but the sales metrics speak for themselves. They've updated it a couple of times, 2016 and 2019. Improving steering, tech, adding options. Comes in turbo, GT, D, diesel too.
And before the Macan, there was the Cayenne. That was actually their return to off-road capable vehicles way back in 2002.
Right, their first modern SUV, midsize luxury. Got fantastic reviews right out of the gate. Hugely important for Porsche's finances, actually. The profits from the Cayenne helped fund a lot of their sports car development.
Smart business. First updated in 2010, what about variants?
First gen had the S and Turbo with V8s, later diesel and VR6 engines. There was a GT version too, and some really cool limited editions, like the Trans-Siberia Rally model, only 26 made.
Wow, a rally Porsche SUV.
Yeah. And a rare GT version in 2010, only 1,000 of those exist. So even with the SUVs, they kept that element of exclusivity in special editions.
It really shows their range. Are there any others we should quickly mention?
Well, the Boxster is important. Came out in 96. Kind of related to the 718 Cayman line. The name's a mashup of Boxster engine and Roadster.
Ah, clever. I remember that being popular.
Very. Won lots of Car of the Year awards. An early one today. Maybe 5,000 to 15,000 pounds, depending on how it's been kept. A great way into open-top Porsche fun.
And wasn't there a sedan before the Panamera, the 928?
Yes, the 928 sold from 78 to 95. That was their attempt at a luxury grand tour, combining sedan comfort with Porsche performance. Very different look.
Are they valuable now?
Some are, Especially the rare CE models from 88 and 89. They only made about 61 of those, so they can go for over 30,000 pounds.
Okay, so what a journey. From Ferdinand Porsche's vision, that first 356, the Racing Spiders, the absolute icon status of the 911.
Through to adapting with the SUVs like Macan and Cayenne, the Panamera for practicality, and now pushing into electric with the Taycan.
It's this incredible mix, isn't it? Timeless design, always innovating, but somehow always feeling like Porsche, and holding value like almost nothing else.
It really is. They've pushed limits constantly, but they refine, they evolve, they don't just throw away their identity. That balanced tradition and looking forward, that's key. It's how you build a legacy, not just cars.
So listening to all this, what really stands out to you, is it that relentless performance focus? How cleverly they've moved into new markets? Or maybe just how powerful a truly iconic design can be?
It makes you think, how does a brand stay so captivating for so long? Constantly changing, yet always the same underneath.
Definitely something to ponder. Join us next time for another deep dive.